The second canto this evening. And this, the end of this chapter, or the beginning of the eighth chapter, ends one of the three parts of the second canto. In the first part of the second canto, we heard of the answer to the question as, what is the duty of a person about to die? This is, practically speaking, the most essential question of our existence. What should we do as we prepare to leave this world? Because what we are doing, or what our consciousness is, the time of death will determine our next body. So how important it is to have our consciousness just right when we leave this world. Because if we do it just right, if our consciousness is full of Krishna, Saratad Bhava Bharata, if our consciousness is devotionally loving Krishna, fully attached to Him, then when we leave this world, we attain our spiritual body, our soul, the natural position of the soul, and we go to live forever with Krishna. But if we don't have our consciousness, our mind, our thoughts full of Krishna, if we are thinking of our pet dog or cat or our pet pig or whatever, then what will happen to us in our next life? The soul, the eternal soul, will be placed within a corresponding body to our thoughts, to our attachments. Whatever the mind is attached to, the soul will take on such a body. So Maharaj Prigat had asked this question because he knew he was going to die. What should I do in the last 7 days of my life? So the first three chapters were Sukadev Goswami's answer to that question. And ultimately what he said was that whatever your position is, whatever anyone's position is, Tivrena Bhakti Yoganiya Jeta Purusha Pada, one should worship the Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person, Purusha Pada, with great strength. That's what one should do. Then following that, the answer to this question by Sukadev Goswami, Maharaj Prigat asked further questions. And in the fifth chapter, those questions about the creation of the universe and who is the creator, who is actually behind this universe, in answer to that question, Sukadev Goswami told Maharaj Prigat a story. Not a story in the sense of a fictional story, but he told him of an incident that had occurred many, many years before. And at this time, Narada Muni, the great sage, asked the first primal, most powerful sub-creator in the universe, Lord Brahma, he asked him basically the same question that Maharaj Prigat had just asked Sukadev Goswami. He asked them, because Brahma had done much of the creation work in the universe, so powerful, so intelligent, and Narada Muni asked him, who is actually the ultimate creator? We see that you've done everything, but yet we see that you are performing austerities to please another, to get power, to do your work. So who actually are you pleasing? Is there someone still greater than you? So that question is asked by Narada Muni in the fifth chapter. And Narada, or rather Brahma, says, no, 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 it is not me who is the creator. With perfect Vaishnava devotional humility, instead of saying, yes, yes, it is me, rather he simply points to the Lord. And he says that everything in this world, in the universe, everything in his existence is simply the energy, a manipulation of the energy of the Lord, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, Lord Krishna. And all we can do, we cannot understand Him fully. He is beyond anyone's understanding. All we can do basically is offer our humble obeisances, requesting His blessings and His grace so we can do some service to Him. So after describing the position, the supreme position of the Lord in relationship to the creation of the universe, Lord Brahma then begins to describe the very nature of the creation, how there is Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, and then he is alone, and then with his glance he impregnates the living entities within the material nature, the Mahatattva, and time is also placed there at that time with the Ichcha Shakti, his desire, and the living entities, karma, and gradually from subtle to gross, we heard about this in some detail, the universe comes into being, the elements of the universe, including demigods, who are like administrators of the universe. And then finally, to give it some direction, the universe direction more or less on how it should be manifest, the Lord manifests a viratarupa, or a universal form. So in the sixth chapter, this universal form is described, which is more or less a materialistic aspect, just like the material energy is not different from Krishna, because nothing can be separate from Krishna. Even though he's aloof, he is separate himself, but nothing is outside of his jurisdiction. Nothing is separate from him, although nothing is exactly the same as him. So Krishna, as already the material world, how he pervades the material world, he manifests a material form, which this material world is basically a material form of Krishna. It is not Krishna's form. It is his external energy, his Maya Shakti, his Bahiranga Shakti. So Lord Brahma then describes how he himself was manifest and the demigods were manifest, and how he, using that form, began to offer sacrifices to the Lord himself. Then finally, at the end of the sixth chapter, Lord Brahma describes how the Lila avatars, because the three Purusha avatars are the forms of Krishna by which he manifests the material world, but yet also Krishna enters in the material world and performs wonderful pastimes. And those forms of Krishna, the avatars, those who descend Krishna's energy within the material world, they are called Lila avatars. They perform wonderful pastimes, activities that attract our minds because they are so wonderful and extraordinary. They attract us and give us something spiritual to talk about, because in this material world, everyone is looking for heroes. Everyone is looking for wonderful personalities to say, did you hear about this and did you hear about that, and this one did this and this one did that. But when we talk about materialistic persons in that way, we just become more and more entangled in the complexities of matter. Well, really what we want to do is get free from matter. And talking about Krishna and hearing about Krishna will free us from matter. It will purify our heart and our mind. Free us from miseries. So therefore Krishna enters this universe so many, unlimitedly many incarnations. Krishna's incarnations come and perform pastimes. And by our hearing about them and talking about them, it is so beneficial for us. So Brahma describes that in the seventh chapter, and he goes through so many different incarnations, and we heard about them last week. Everyone from Korma, Matsya, Avatar, Rama, Krishna, Kalki, Buddha. And then in the last section that we read on last Friday, Lord Brahma was explaining how everything, again, more or less summing up the points, that everything in this world, in the universe, is simply a manifestation of the Lord's energies. And He is so powerful. He is so powerful that no one in fact can know Him in full. He's so much beyond the purview, the scope of the living entity's intelligence and ability to know in full. This is God. He is infinite. And we are so tiny. So no one can know Him in full. But yet, if one surrenders to Him, acts in His natural position as a servant, and becomes filled with devotion to Krishna, then by Krishna's grace, then one can know something about Krishna. So devotion, Brahma explains, that devotion to know Krishna, devotion, love, devotional service, bhakti, is the only thing that is actually required. Everything else will be provided by Krishna. If we have devotion, everything becomes perfect by Krishna's grace. So, after describing these points, and after he describes the very pure nature of the Lord, and explaining that if we worship Him, there can be no lack for us. Because in the material world, we require so many different things, and those things come to us by our karma. Good things come to us, bad things come to us by our karma. But Krishna is the one, the ultimate manifester of that karma, as the supersoul. He is the one that ultimately awards us whatever wealth we deserve, whatever happiness we deserve. That is all coming from Krishna, ultimately. So if we take direct shelter of Krishna, what can we lack? Nothing. So therefore there is no loss, there is only gain by taking shelter of Krishna. So this answers the questions that Narada asked Brahma, that Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami about who is the ultimate creator, the ultimate powerful personality, the controller of this world. And he explains clearly that this is Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadira Adya Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. It is Krishna who is the source of everything. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. He is the supreme person, the ultimate worshipable person, whom if we begin to worship Him with full devotion, we make that connection with Krishna, then our life becomes perfect. So in text 50, after describing all this in the last few chapters, 5, 6, and 7, towards the end of 7, to conclude this chapter, Lord Brahma says to Narada Muni, "My dear son, I have now explained in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without Him, Hari, the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and noumenal existence." Phenomenal and noumenal existence means the material world and the spiritual world. There is no cause beyond Him. This in Sanskrit, the words of the material and spiritual world is sada sat chayat. That He is the one, whatever there is in the material and spiritual world, it is Krishna that is causing it. And there is no cause beyond Him. Krishna Himself has no cause. This is the meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the cause of everything, and He Himself has no cause. Sada sad chayat. So in explaining this, that Krishna is the manifest, the ultimate cause of this world, Srila Srila Swami comments in this regard that this verse concludes the purport of the last previous chapters 5, 6, and 7. Because in answer to the question, who is the ultimate cause? Is it you? Narada asks his father Brahma, and Brahma says, ultimately no, after describing all this. No, I am not the supreme cause, it is the Lord. I am just a devotee. Whatever I have done, I am the secondary doer. I have just created what the Lord has created primarily. I have created it again. He created it in a subtle form, and I just manifest that. Prabhupada explains in the last paragraph of the purport, because sometimes we think there are many people in this world who lack a spiritual vision and spiritual piety. So when they see that, when they hear that God has created the material world, they get very angry at him and say, why have you done it? Such a horrible place. So there's tidal waves that come and kill thousands of people. There's diseases that kill thousands of people. There's wars that kill thousands of people. We're supposed to thank you? You're the creator, so you're the one we should be yelling at. That's how people do think. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, the last paragraph, one should not deprecate the Supreme Lord for the creation of this miserable world. Maybe we can open a window. Just as one should not blame the king for creating a prison house in the government. A great example. Whose fault is it that the prisoners are in the prison house? The prisoners who are corrupt and who have not learned their lesson, when someone asks them, why are you in prison? They answer, well, the judge put me here. But is that, yes, that's true to some degree. Without the judge saying 5 years in prison, you wouldn't be there. But what is the actual cause of you being in the prison? It's that you committed a crime. That's why you're there. It's not the judge's fault. So until the prisoners understand their own crime, that they're the ones who put themselves in the prison, in the miserable, constricted prison house, how will they ever become rectified? Judge did it. Then how will they change their mind? How will they give up their criminal mentality? So, the prison house is a necessary institution of the governmental establishment for those who are disobedient to the laws of the government. Similarly, this material world full of miseries is a temporary creation of the Lord for those who have forgotten Him and are trying to lord it over the false manifestation of the material world. And who are those people who have forgotten Him and are trying themselves to be the Lord and the enjoyers and manipulate everything to get pleasure? That is all of us. And therefore we are in the prison house of the material world. The Lord, however, is always anxious to get the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. And for this, He has given so many chances to the conditioned souls via the authoritative scriptures, His representatives, and His personal incarnations also. So we've heard about these. Since He has no direct attachment to this material world, He is not to be blamed for its creation. It is there as the prison house is there in the government. So that sums up Brahma's words, sum up what has been explained previously by him in the last chapter. It is the Lord. And then he says to Narada Muni, and we'll read the 51, 52, and 53, all three verses, which ends the chapter. He tells Narada Muni, my dear son, O Narada, this science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. and it was spoken as the accumulation of his diverse potencies. Please expand this science yourself. So after giving knowledge about Krishna's position to Narada Muni, he's going to give him a service to do. And that service is to explain what the Lord has explained to Brahma. Brahma is going to now explain to Narada, and Brahma is telling Narada to expand this and make it even easier to understand. So he says, please, O Narada, please describe the science of Godhead with determination and in a manner by which it will be quite possible for the human being to develop transcendental devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Hari, the supersoul of every living being, and the summum bonum, the original source of all energies. So you describe it in such a way that when people hear this Srimad Bhagavatam, their devotion will increase, their desire to serve the Lord. They'll understand their relationship with Krishna, that he is great, all-powerful, and that we are so tiny and insignificant. And naturally, because the very nature of the material world is always changing and it's tumultuous, naturally, they will wish to take shelter of him. Please describe it in such a way that they will take shelter of the Lord. The Lord's activities in association with his different energies should be described, appreciated, and heard in accordance with the teachings of the Supreme Lord. If this is done regularly with devotion and respect, if what is done regularly with devotion and respect? If we hear, appreciate, and describe the Lord's activities with his different energies, that means his material energies and the spiritual energies, what will happen? One is sure to get out of the illusory energy of the Lord. So that's the end of this chapter. Now let's hear something from the purports of the three verses that I just read. So in text 51, where Brahma tells Narada to please expand the science, he gives the order to him directly, please, you take this science, which you haven't heard yet, but I still have it in the next chapter. Naturally, they want to know what did you hear directly from the Lord? That question is going to be asked. But here, Brahma is saying, I want you to take this science that I heard directly from the Lord and expand it. Then in the next verse, he says, Brahma says, that if please describe this, and if by hearing this, human beings will develop their devotional service to the Lord, who is the source of all the energies that we've just heard about. And then in 53, and in that verse, or in the verse prior to that actually, Prabhupada explains how one must hear. And the first principle of hearing is that if one wants to develop love for Krishna in the mood of that Brahma is speaking about, one has to hear from someone in disciplic succession. Because the Lord told it to Brahma, explained it to Brahma, Brahma explains it to Narada, Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Madhvacharya. So in this way, there is a disciplic succession. And if one hears in this line of disciplic succession, the message will be intact and one will come to the right conclusion. And if one hears in a different way, whimsically, from someone who has not heard it properly, then a different conclusion will be reached. Then in text 53, in this verse, it described the results of hearing. What will happen if one hears the Bhagavatam regularly with devotion? And this is this and respect, and this is the part that that comes gradually. Because the more one hears about Krishna, the more one develops devotion for Krishna. Because the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam are no different from Krishna. And Krishna himself is all attractive. And the more one hears about him, the more one associates with him, by hearing about him, the more one naturally becomes attracted to him, because he is all attractive. That is what Krishna means. So if one regularly does this, one becomes attracted to Krishna and all illusion is dispelled. And devotion comes to the heart. So what should one hear about? How the Lord interacts with his different energies. That is what the Bhagavatam is. How he interacts with the devotees and the energy in his different energies, the internal and the external energy. And Prabhupada explains in his purport, we'll read the beginning of the purport, he explains that one has to hear the Bhagavatam from the very beginning. So one can develop his devotion. Because in the 10th canto, what is described in the first 9 cantos, the Lord's dealings with his external energy, the material energy, are described. And then in the 10th canto, the Lord's dealings with his spiritual energy, the internal energy, are described. Unless one has been purified by hearing the first 9 cantos, one will not have the prerequisite devotion to properly understand the 10th canto when he hears it. Because then, if one is not purified, if one doesn't have the proper devotion, then when one hears the 10th canto about Krishna's dealings in Vrindavan, all spiritual, but they so much resemble material dealings, one will think them material. But the material dealings are actually a reflection of these spiritual dealings. But unless one is purified, one will mistake them for material dealings. So therefore, one has to read from the beginning. So Prabhupada explains this in the purport. One should not jump directly to the 10th canto. I'm going to read some of that right now. Prabhupada explains, the science of learning a subject matter seriously is different from the sentiments of fanatics. Fanatics or fools may consider the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy to be useless for them. And they may falsely claim to be higher participants in the internal energy of the Lord. But factually, the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy and the internal energy are equally good. On the other hand, those who are not completely free from the clutches of the Lord's external energy, the material energy, should devoutly hear regularly about the activities of the Lord in relation with the external energy. In other words, one should hear about how great Krishna is until we understand our relationship with him and get purified from the envy that we have and the desire ourselves to enjoy the material world and look at the material world as if it was meant for our enjoyment. Exploiting the material energy, until we are freed from that, until we recognize our relationship with Krishna, that he is the enjoyer, that he is great, that he is powerful, we still have to continuously hear, like medicine, taking medicine, until this disease is removed from the heart. So such people who are not yet purified, they should not foolishly jump up to the activities of the internal energy, falsely attracted by the Lord's internal potential activities like his Rasalila. This is the internal energies of the Lord that are described in the 10th canto. The cheap reciters of the Bhagavatam are very much enthusiastic about the Lord's internal potential activities, and the pseudo-devotees, absorbed in material sense enjoyment, falsely jump to the stage of liberated souls and thus fall down deeply into the clutches of external energy. Some of them think that to hear about the pastimes of the Lord means to hear about his activities with the gopis or about his pastimes like lifting Govardhan Hill. And they think that they have nothing to do with the Lord's plenary expansions as the Purusha avatars and their pastimes of creation, maintenance, or annihilation of the material worlds. But a pure devotee knows that there is no difference between the pastimes of the Lord, either in Rasalila or in creation, maintenance, or destruction of the material world. Rather, the descriptions of such activities of the Lord as the Purusha avatars are specifically meant for persons who are in the clutches of the external energy. Topics like the Rasa Leela are meant for the liberated souls and not for the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls, therefore, must hear with appreciation and devotion the Lord's pastimes in relationship with the external energy. And such acts are as good as the hearing of Rasa Leela in the liberated state. So both are so uplifting, but one should take specific medicine, the medicine of hearing. What one should hear should be based on one's purity of heart. A conditioned soul should not imitate the activities of liberated souls. Lord Chaitanya never indulged in hearing the Rasa Leela with ordinary men. So a very important point that Prabhupada stressed so many times. So that ends the seventh chapter where Narada was given the instruction by Lord Brahma to hear the message of Bhagavatam and then expand it and make it accessible to conditioned souls, because by hearing that they will become purified and they'll become purified and escape from the illusory energy of the Lord. Now, in the beginning of the eighth chapter, that amplification of the steps towards the expanding the message that Krishna told to Lord Brahma previously, that Brahma told Narada to expand. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, how did Narada Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, how did he explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? So he's asking, well, how did Narada Muni actually explain this? And again, in the purport, Prabhupada explains about the disciplic succession, that if Brahma tells Narada, and Narada with full realization and devotion repeats that exact message unchanged, then the potency will be exactly the same as if the people who are hearing from Narada have heard it from Brahma. This is disciplic succession. So the king continued to ask, I wish to know what Narada did. Narrations concerning the Lord, who possesses wonderful potencies, are certainly auspicious for living beings in all planets. Regardless of anyone's position, if they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains here in the purport, even if non-devotees, I'll read the whole purport, it's so short, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of narrations of the activities of the Supreme Lord, is auspicious for all living beings residing in every planet. One who takes it as belonging to a particular sect is certainly mistaken. Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly a very dear scripture for all the devotees of the Lord, but it is auspicious even for the non-devotees. Also, because it explains that even the non-devotees hovering under the spell of the material energy can be delivered from such clutches if they hear the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam with devotion and attention from the right source representing the Lord by disciplic succession. And in text 3, Maharaj Parikshit continues, speaking to Sukadeva Goswami, yes, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my mind upon the Supreme Soul, Lord Sri Krishna, and being completely freed from material qualities, thus relinquish this body. So this was his desire, to keep on hearing about Krishna and allowing his consciousness to be fixed on Krishna with great devotion, so that when he leaves the body, after maybe 6 more days or 5 more days, whatever it is, when he leaves his body, when he dies, he will go to the spiritual world. So he's asking Sukadeva Goswami to continue speaking about the Lord. Prabhupada explains in the purport, and these verses and purports are full of many glorifications of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and they give us a glimpse of the potency of proper hearing from the proper sources. So Prabhupada explains here, to be fully engaged in hearing the transcendental narration described in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam means to constantly associate with the Supreme Soul, Lord Sri Krishna. So what does it mean to hear Bhagavatam? It means to be associating with Krishna. And to constantly associate with the Supreme Lord Krishna means to be liberated from the qualities of matter. Lord Krishna is like the sun. A material contamination is like darkness. As the presence of the sun dissipates darkness, constant engagement in the association of Lord Sri Krishna frees one from the contamination of the material qualities. Contamination by the material qualities is the cause of repeated birth and death. And liberation from material qualities is transcendence. Parikit Maharaj Parikit was now a realized soul by the secret of liberation, because he had been hearing already from Sukadeva Goswami, through the grace of Sukadeva Goswami, for the latter had informed the king that the highest perfection of life is to be in remembrance of Narayan at the end of life. Maharaj Parikit was destined to give up his body at the end of 7 days, and thus he decided to continue remembering the Lord by the association with the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus to quit his body in full consciousness of the presence of the Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Text 4. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly are always taking the matter very seriously and will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifest in their hearts within a short time. And Sridhar Swami comments on this verse that there is no necessity of exertion for obtaining the grace of the Supreme Lord for a person who hears with devotion the Lord's pastimes. In other words, if one hears with devotion the Lord's pastimes, that is sufficient to get the grace of the Lord. It is sufficient in and of itself. But the difficulty is that one must hear with devotion. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the first line of the purport, cheap devotees or materialistic devotees of the Lord are very much desirous to see the Lord personally without meeting the requisite qualifications. Such third grade devotees should know well that material attachment and seeing the Lord face to face cannot go together. So in other words, if one wants to get the benefit from the Bhagavatam, one has to hear properly. One must hear properly with devotion, and one must take the messages as we hear them and apply them. That means we have to get detached from matter. But even if we're not detached from matter, just by hearing the Bhagavatam, all benefit will gradually come. Now, we're going to play a tape here. This is Prabhupada speaking in Vrindavan, and it's just 1 year before Prabhupada left this world himself. So you can hear the strain in Prabhupada's voice. It's difficult, but Prabhupada was so amazing that although it was difficult for him to speak, we can hear how strongly still he speaks and how he continued his preaching. Okay.
This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaching. Yungayana nimusena chakshusha prayushayitam. Sunnayatam Jagat Sarvam. This is Sunnayatam. Jagat is not Sunnayatam. Just like we have a practical experience. If somebody's beloved has died, he sees everything below. Nothing is appealing to him. Similarly, if we have never applied love for Krishna, and if we do not see Krishna, there is Sunnayata, Jalasandra, Govinda Virahina. But a devotee and an ordinary person, if the ordinary person wants to see something, and if he cannot see, he becomes angry, because there is calm. But a devotee, he says that Krishna, although the whole world is beckoned, because I cannot see you, still I cannot change my mind to love. One side Sunnayata Jalasandram, the other side Asishma Padaratam Vinastumam Varmatam Karoduva Padasanam. You break my heart by not allowing me to see you. Still, you are my beloved worshipper of the Lord. That is the difference. There is no manu, no disappointment. Disappointment is there, but so much disappointed, then broken heart. Still, he wants to love Krishna. Oh, that is pure love. Not that I have been disappointed, my heart is broken, therefore I give up Krishna. No. Still, Krishna is good. That is pure love. So you have to learn in that way. Tam Krishna. Otherwise, karma. Jagyartha karma. Karma ni. Anyatra karma van. Brahma. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Jagga means Vishnu. Whatever you do, if it is for Krishna, then you are liberated. Otherwise, karma van. You are bound up by the laws of nature. Karma van. So karma van ha janamula. If we act for our sense gratification, then this karma krodha is bondage. And if we don't accept this karma vandha, then we are liberated. Very easy thing. So we have to purify our desires. Sarvapati vinin muktam kaparatina nirmanam. When we give up this conception of life, that I am Indian, I am Christian, I am Hindu, this and that. These are upadis. So, while serving Krishna, don't come back to the upadhi platform. That we are Indians and they are Europeans, so they are taking more advantage and we are not given advantage. Or vice versa. This means coming back to the upadhi. That is not the stage of the world. We have to become free from the upadhi. I am neither Indian nor American. I am eternally Krishna's servant, that's all. Whatever Krishna orders, in whichever position he keeps me, I am his eternal servant. This is upadhi mukta nirmana, pure stage. Now when we are in the pure stage, the same karma, the same manu, the same mala loha, the sukha lamentation, this guy, the gopi, the lamenting. Krishna is going to Mathura and he has gone there. The lamentation is there. But this lamentation and our lamentation is not the same. Therefore, in the beginning, the neophyte devotee, they should not try to understand the dealings of the gopis with Krishna. They should not try to understand. Sarvapati vinir muktam paparatyana nirmalam. That means we have to execute devotional service in the regulative principle. I cannot follow this is a living principle, and I am trying to understand Radha Krishna there. This is Raskarna. This is Raskarna. Only Raskarna, he does not see his position, that what is my position. I am still full of lusty desires. My mind is still disturbed by seeing a nice woman, a nice man, and I am discussing Radha Krishna. This is nonsense. Nathandas Thakur said, Rupanabhu Nathu Pade Kuyi Akuti Kave Amo Bhujavase Jigarati. Unless you are expert in devotional service by practical application of the instruction of Bhakti Dasamrita Sindhu, Rupanabhu Nathu Pade Kuyi Akuti. Then, if we are qualified, then someday we may be able to understand what is jugalabhiriti, love between Krishna and Radha. Not so sadly. That is shaurya. Not so sadly. You should not try to do it. First of all, I must see how much I have become sarvapadhi vinimuktam. How much I agree from the designational position. Then we shall be able. The Radha Krishna Pralaya, the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna, this is not ordinary thing. When you worship Radha Krishna, you shall think ourselves as servant of Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna.
Text 4, in explaining the potency of the Bhagavatam. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. And then in 5, the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, meaning the Bhagavatam, that sound incarnation of Krishna, the Bhagavatam, enters the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Now, these two verses, I'm going to read just the verse and the purports of Prabhupada because they're very special and sweet. Prabhupada explains in the purport to that verse, it is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. Thus one who is actually in the confidence of a pure devotee like Narada or Sukadeva Goswami, and thus is empowered by one spiritual master, as Narada was by Brahmaji, can not only deliver himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion, but can deliver the whole world by his pure and empowered devotional strength. The comparison to the autumnal rains that falls on muddy reservoirs of water is very appropriate. During the rainy season, all the waters of the rivers become muddy. But in the month of July, August, the autumn season, when there is a slight rainfall, the muddy waters of the rivers all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water, like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank, can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water like the rivers. A powerful pure devotee of the Lord, however, can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. In other words, the cleansing of the polluted heart by other methods, like the culture of empiric knowledge or mystic gymnastics, can simply cleanse one's own heart. But devotional service to the Lord is so powerful that it can cleanse the hearts of the people in general by the devotional service of the pure empowered devotee. A true representative of the Lord, like Narada, Sukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, and later Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur and Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., can deliver all people by their empowered devotional service. By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in the transcendental humor of servitude, friendship, paternal affection, or conjugal love. And by such self-realization, one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Not only were all the pure devotees like Narada self-realized souls, but they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus, and thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in the material modes. They became so powerful because they sincerely followed the Bhagavatam principles by regularly hearing and worshipping. By such actions, the accumulated material lusts, etc., become cleansed by the personal endeavor of the Lord within the heart. Krishna himself within the heart does the cleansing. The Lord is always within the heart of the living being, but he becomes manifest by one's devotional service. And then right at the end, the idea is that devotional service to the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good. Whereas other methods may be superficially good for the time being, there is a risk of becoming muddy again due to agitation of the mind. Devotional service to the Lord with specific attention for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and always is the best recommended method for liberation from the clutches of illusion. So the Bhagavatam is being glorified here. And this is what Sukadeva Goswami, or rather Maharaj Prakrit, is actually saying this to Sukadeva Goswami, because he's encouraging Sukadeva to speak more Bhagavatam so he can hear, because he wants his heart purified, because he wants to focus his mind on the Lord. Why? Because he knows he's going to die. He's not being whimsical and frivolous like we sometimes tend to be when we think, I'm going to play with this and I'm curious about this and play with that and explore this and enjoy this and then play with that and on and on and on and on, because somehow or another we think we're not going to die. But Maharaj Prakrit is so serious because he knows his end is coming, and he's preparing with full determined intelligence. And then in the final verse we'll read, a pure devotee of the Lord, Maharaj Prakrit says, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. What a wonderful metaphor or simile. Like a traveler. So a devotee who has realized something about Krishna, he keeps Krishna's feet always within the core of his heart because they bring him so much satisfaction, like a traveler after traveling for so long and undergoing so much trouble. When he finally goes home, he can relax with full satisfaction and he won't go anywhere else. So similarly, the devotees keep the Lord always within their hearts. And here is Prabhupada's purport. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord Krishna is not completely cleansed in the heart. But a perfectly cleansed person never quits the devotional service of the Lord. In discharging such devotional service, as ordered by Brahmaji to Narada in the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes a representative of the Lord engaged in preaching work meets various so-called difficulties. Because when in the beginning of our devotional service, we may think that, oh, we're going to become a Hare Krishna devotee and everything's going to be fun and it's going to be all Jai Prabhu and sweets and Gulab Jamuns and just good times only. But actually, when we get an order from the Lord and we try to execute the order, sometimes there are various difficulties which Prabhupada calls so-called difficulties. Now, why are they so-called difficulties and not actual difficulties? We'll hear. Nityananda, this was exhibited by Lord Nityananda when he delivered the two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. And simply, he was chased by them. They tried to kill him. He was trying to get them to chant Hare Krishna. They were drunkards. He was trying to help them, to save them from the misery of their ignorance and a future horrible birth. And they chased them and tried to kill him. And similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified by the non-believers. So, are these so-called difficulties, people trying to kill you or crucifying you? But such difficulties are very gladly suffered by the devotees in preaching, because in such activities, although apparently very severe, the devotees of the Lord feel transcendental pleasure because the Lord is satisfied. There is such a direct connection between the devotee and the Lord that when the devotee knows that he is doing something in the Lord's service and the Lord is pleased, the devotee himself feels such transcendental pleasure despite the miserable externals or what his situation may appear to be like externally. It may appear to be the most miserable, difficult circumstance externally. But inside the devotee, because he's doing something for Krishna's pleasure and Krishna is reciprocating with him and giving him so much pleasure, the externals truly do not match up with what is going on internally for him. Prahlad Maharaj, another example, suffered greatly. But still he never forgot the lotus feet of the Lord. This is because a pure devotee of the Lord is so purified in his heart that he cannot leave the shelter of Lord Krishna in any circumstances. There is no self-interest in such service. In other words, the devotee doesn't make demands. When I became a Hare Krishna devotee, I thought I was going to be happy all the time, and I thought this, and I thought that, and I thought there'd be never any troubles, and I'd never get sick, and this wouldn't happen. No. Because that mood is with us as the center. And gradually, for us to go to the spiritual world, to go to Krishna Loka, Krishna has to become the center. So rather than doing things for our own selfish pleasure, gradually or quickly, we have to learn the art of doing things for Krishna's pleasure, and that's called bhakti. And when one is truly doing things for Krishna's pleasure, there is so much satisfaction attached to that, then the externals, even if they are very difficult, they become impetus. Oh Krishna, please be satisfied. Let me offer this to you. And that makes that actually, even in the circumstances, very difficult. It brings even still greater pleasure to the devotee because Krishna is so pleased by the sacrifice of the devotee. Because there is no self-interest in such service. The devotee, the actual devotee, the pure devotee, his interest is only Krishna's pleasure. And thereby by having that mood, he himself becomes ecstatic. The progress of culturing knowledge by the jnanis or the bodily gymnastics by the yogis are ultimately given up by the respective performers. But a devotee of the Lord cannot give up the service of the Lord, for he is ordered by his spiritual master. Pure devotees like Narada and Nityananda Prabhu take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. They take the matter very seriously as the order comes from the higher authority, from the representative of the Lord, or from the Lord himself. The example set herein is very appropriate. A traveler leaves home to search for wealth in far distant places, sometimes in the forest and sometimes on the ocean and sometimes on hilltops. Certainly, there are many troubles for the traveler when he is in such unknown places. But all such troubles are at once mitigated as soon as the sense of family affection is remembered. And as soon as he returns home, he forgets all such troubles on the way. A pure devotee of the Lord is exactly in a family tie with the Lord, and therefore he is undeterred in discharging his duty in a full affectionate tie with the Lord. His consciousness is simply fixed on the Lord's pleasure and the remembrance of that. This is love. It's not that he artificially has to do that, but that is his goal. That is the happiness of his life. He's that realized. That is the happiness of his life, to collect this wealth, to do this service. In the example, it's of the family members. The businessman, he struggles, undergoes so much anxiety day after day after day, and then he thinks that the service he's doing for his family, and he feels relieved. And then when he goes home, he feels relief, and all the troubles he forgets. So similarly, the devotee, he may be doing something that's so difficult, but because his mind is fixed on the goal, Krishna's pleasure, and he's experiencing Krishna in that, therefore, so-called difficulties. You ask a businessman, he may be working so hard, so much anxiety for his children, and then you ask him, boy, this was so much hard work for you, isn't it? So terrible, isn't it? And say, no. Because why? Because of the love, the affection for his family members that he has. There's pleasure in that. So what to speak of if one is devoted to Krishna? What to speak of that? It's a very wonderful verse spoken by Sri Sukadeva Maharaj Purkit in glorification. And now he's going to ask some questions to Sukadeva Goswami, and we'll hear those tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.